Richard Ford is in the studio tonight. He's the author of several short story collections, including Rock Springs, Women with Men, and A Multitude of Sins. His novels include The Sports Writer, Independence Day, and The Lay of the Land. Independence Day is the only novel to have won both the Penn Faulkner Award and the Pulitzer Prize. He's taught creative writing at a number of universities, most recently Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland, and Columbia University. Welcome, Richard. Glad you're here.
Glad to be here, Barbara. Nice to be in Cincinnati.
I'd like to begin with the title of your novel, which is Canada. This is your latest book and what we're going to talk about tonight. For many of us in this part of the country, Canada to the north of us conjures up a vacation state of mind, deep, cool forests, clean waters. But this is not the landscape that Del Parsons, the focal character in your novel, finds when he arrives there. So could you paint us just a bit of a verbal picture about where we are in Canada and what it's like?
Well, he's in Saskatchewan, and Saskatchewan is sort of the heart of the Prairie Provinces, and it is wide open spaces. It's big grain fields and no mountains to speak of, and an enormous dome of sky. For me, it's a almost unthinkably beautiful place, and all of those things that you described, all those sylvan images of central Canada and on into the Maritimes, are beautiful in their own way. But for me, to be able to look across these wide, empty expanses of landscape is, to me, so pleasurable and consoling, and makes me feel right about where I am on the earth when I can do that. Whereas those other kinds of landscapes, mountain landscapes or forested landscapes, I feel a little lost in those places. So probably the reason that I set half of this book in Saskatchewan is that I like it. I mean, it gave me an opportunity to try to describe those landscapes and to do them some justice.
There is a reference to the towering weather there.
Yes.
One imagines this vastness of space and weather coming in
sweeping
very quickly.
Through. Well, you can see it a long way off, the weather when it's coming, which is one of the grace notes of living there. But the weather is profound there in almost every sense of profundity. I mean, it burrows into you. It is unceasing. It makes you feel like you're in the presence of something greater than you are. And of course, it's dangerous, too. But in my book, I was trying to, this is a book about a little boy who's taken across the border into Saskatchewan against his will because his parents have robbed a bank, and he's put there when he gets to Saskatchewan into the, so to speak, care of a man who is himself a fugitive from justice in America. And so he's basically put someplace where he's almost completely isolated when he gets there. And I was trying to account for the amount of time that he spends in Saskatchewan during the course of the book, which is about 6 weeks. And I finally realized that the experience really of being there would be timeless, and that you would really reckon your existence there in terms of the weather, that the weather, in a way, supplants the passage of time.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Del Parsons, who is recalling this time when he was 15. How does he actually get to Fort Royal, Saskatchewan? And who is this interesting fellow that is to be his mentor?
His minder. He's not much of a mentor, if you take the word from its root. Del is 15. The year is 1960. His parents, Americans, are living in Great Falls, Montana, where his father discharges out of the Air Force. He's been in the Air Force through the Second World War, and now it's 1960, 15 years on, and he's come to the point in his life where he feels that he needs to get out of the service. But what he finds when he gets out of the service is that he really doesn't know how to take care of himself, because he's been, in essence, a lifer in the Air Force all these years. And he's got a family, twins, boy and a girl, and he immediately falls into financial straits and runs afoul of some rather devious Indians trying to enact a scheme to sell stolen beef to the railroad. And what happens is he is terrified by these Indians, and they scare him so bad by threatening his life that he robs a bank to get some money that he owes them, and is immediately thrown into jail with his wife because she's his accomplice. And after that, the children, the boy and the girl, the twins, are dispersed, in essence. The little girl runs away to California, and the little boy is taken across by a friend of his mother's into Saskatchewan to be put in the care of the woman who takes them the care of her brother, who is a fugitive from justice in America, where he has committed a murder. So it's out of the frying pan into the fire for Dale. But the book started with me thinking way back in 1989 that it would be good to write a story about a boy who crosses that border against his will. And so then once I figured out that would be the principal sort of pivotal action for the book, then I had to backfill all of the pretextual information about would a 15-year-old boy be taken across the border against his will. I thought, well, what could his parents possibly have done that would be so preclusive of the rest of their family life? And so I thought, well, rob a bank, because I thought it'd be fun to describe robbing a bank. And it was.
Borders are a big theme in this. There's the yes. obvious crossing of the border from Montana into Canada. But there are a lot of other borders. And Dell, the main character, has this great line, many bad events originate just an inch away from the everyday. So here are his dad and his mom as the accomplice who fall from this normal life into being felons.
Right, and put in jail.
Talk a bit about borders and about especially how Dell deals with those, because he's a character to me who had this quiet tenacity. I kept thinking of Turner's Frontier thesis and how, in a quiet way, this character really plays that out.
As I said, Dell is a twin, and his sister is a little advanced of both physically and intellectually and emotionally beyond him, although they're only minutes different in age. And he is the more sheltered of these two, the more inward-turning, the more reflective, and in some ways, the more disciplined of the two of them, and the more thoughtful about the consequences of any action that befalls him or that he himself enacts. And so he seemed to me to be a good operator for this book. He seemed to me to be a good person to tell this story about his parents. What saves him really through the course of the book and what allows, because he is saved, for the book to be narrated is that he was a child who was loved. And he never really goes beyond the fact of being loved, even though events turned hellish are all around him. His parents thrown in jail. Murders take place in front of him. He's marooned in a country not his own. It is the fact that he has a kind of eminence which allows him to trust himself, which allows him to trust the best aspects of himself so that, and you started asking me about borders, so that I think that he understands that normal life is just a breath away from felonious life. Normal life is just a mistake away from disaster. And so he simply doesn't abandon normal life or his sense of it. He just understands that he watched his parents do this terrible, feckless, disastrous thing. He learns about the man who takes care of him, whose name is Arthur Rimlinger, how he fell afoul of bad luck just through an act of carelessness. And so his sense of discipline, his sense of trusting to the best in himself and the best in others is what saves him. In that way, it's a book about persistence and renewal.
And tolerating loss, he ultimately believes that being flexible about loss is something that has stood him in good stead.
Yes, he does. But that's one of those instances in which a piece of canned knowledge, I've wormed it into my book. But I wormed it into my book in a fairly organic way because when I was inflicting on him all of these losses, the truth of that old apothegm that people who live best and live longest are those people who sustain loss most successfully, the truth of that old apothegm got visited on me not in a canned way, but almost as if it were an act of my own devising. And I just happened to devise something that coincided with something that gerontologists and sociologists have long believed to be true.
I want to thank you for visiting with us. I want to thank you for giving us the character of Dell Parsons. I'll remember him for a long time.
Well, Barbara, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
I have been talking with Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Ford about his latest novel, Canada. You'll find more information at WVXU.org or around Cincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.